feature off another Franklin Matters radio show. This session of the radio show shares the Franklin Mass Board of Health meeting held on Wednesday, January 5th, 2022. The meeting was held in the third floor training room with some members remote and some public participants in the room as well as participating remotely. I recorded this via the Zoom conference bridge while participating remotely. The recording runs just over an hour, about 62 minutes. So let's listen to this public meeting of the Board of Health held on January 5th, 2022.
All right, so we are right at 5 o'clock. And let me just pull up. So as a preliminary matter, this is Bridget Sweet. We will be opening the Board of Health meeting on January 5th, 2020 in a hybrid format. Permit me to confirm that all members and persons anticipated on the agenda are present and can hear me. And members, when I call your name, please respond to the affirmative. Vice Chair Jeff Harris.
Here.
And member Tim Cochran.
Here.
Hi, Tim. Staff, when I call your name, please respond to the affirmative. Director of Public Health, Kathleen Liberty.
Here.
Health Agent, Ginny McNeil.
Here.
Medicomet Inspector, Matt Tiennes.
Here.
And Public Health Nurse, Alicia.
Here.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Good.
So the introduction to our hybrid meeting, this meeting of the Franklin Board of Health is being conducted hybrid and remote, consistent with Governor Baker's executive order of March 12, 2020, due to the current state of emergency in the Commonwealth from the outbreak of the COVID-19 virus. In order to mitigate the transmission of this virus, we have been advised and directed by the Commonwealth to suspend public gatherings. And as such, the governor's order suspends the requirement of the open meeting law to have all meetings in a publicly accessible physical location. Further, all members of public body are allowed and encouraged to participate remotely. The order can be found posted with agenda materials from the meeting, allows for public bodies to meet entirely remotely so as long as reasonable public access is afforded, so that the public may follow along with the deliberations of this meeting. Ensuring public access does not ensure public participation unless such participation is required by law. However, this meeting will allow public comment as necessary. For this meeting, the Franklin Board of Health is convening by telephone video conference via the Zoom application, as posted on the town's website, identifying how the public may join. For this Zoom meeting, actually, I didn't record it yet. Just kidding. Hold, please.
Bridget, can you call Melissa too?
Recording in progress.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll do that after. Yep. Please note that this meeting is being recorded and that some attendees may be participating by video conference. Accordingly, please be advised that other people may be able to see you and take care not to screen share your computer. Anything you broadcast may be captured by the recording. All supporting materials that have been provided to the members of this body are available on the website unless otherwise noted. The public is encouraged to follow along using the posted agenda unless otherwise noted. Please note that the chair will introduce each speaker on the agenda. After they conclude their remarks, the chair will go down the line of the members, inviting each by name to provide any comment, questions, or motions. And as this is a hybrid format, Kathleen will help support the public who are in person at Town Hall in order to deliberate and provide their comments. Finally, in the matter of a hybrid meeting, each vote taken in this meeting shall be conducted by a roll call vote. And with that, I did eliminate or forget one of our important staff people. So Melissa, are you present?
I am here.
Sorry, Melissa. It's that last name. I never know how to say it, so I just skip over it.
Melissa K.
Melissa K. All right. So with that being said, we do have a packed agenda. So let me just go to the agenda. So the first item on the agenda is the reading and acceptance of the December 8th, 2021 meeting minutes. Is there any discussion, deliberation on those meeting minutes that we did receive in our email packet previously in the week?
No.
No.
Okay. Is there a motion to accept the minutes as submitted?
I make a motion to accept the minutes.
Is there a second?
Second the motion.
Okay, so all in favor, Jeff?
Yes.
Tim?
Yes.
And the chair votes yes. So the minutes of December 8th are accepted unanimously. So the next?
I could have a copy of the agenda.
Is that with you, Kathleen?
Someone was just requesting an agenda.
Okay. So the next item on the agenda is the public hearing for the use of existing septic tanks and repair or upgrade situation regulations. So we will open the public hearing at 5:04 p.m. Prior to the public hearing, I will go ahead and I will read the public hearing notice regarding this particular situation. So the following notice was published in the Milford Daily Newspaper once on Wednesday, December 22nd, and again on Wednesday, December 29th. And the public hearing notice states that notice is hereby given that the Franklin Board of Health will hold both a remote public hearing via Zoom and in person at the Town Hall Training Room, third floor, number 326, on Wednesday, January 5th at 5 p.m. Please visit the town website under Health Department to access the remote link or to call in. This hearing will discuss making a regulation on use of existing septic tanks and repair or upgrade situations. Existing septic tanks that do not meet the current Title V minimum capacity requirements of 1,500 gallons will not be approved for use in either a repair or upgrade situation. In addition, all septic tanks installed prior to March 31st, 1995 will not be approved for use in either a repair or upgrade situation. That is the public hearing notice. And with that, I will welcome professional staff to come up and explain why we are having this hearing and what the difference in regulations is, please. So it's either Kathleen or Matt Tanis.
Well, give an explanation of the regulation. I was asked to assist in drafting this regulation. We had some concerns with repair or upgrade plans that were being submitted to the office, putting the burden of certifying the tank structural integrity on the homeowner. The engineer who's designing the system, some engineers that were fenced did not want to certify themselves. Existing tanks should be certified as structurally sound and leak proof by a licensed Title V inspector. New tank is determined necessary by the Board of Health. It shall be a minimum of 1,500 gallons to meet the current Title V requirements. The concern with that is the Title V inspector is not an engineer. Title V inspector is someone who can take a two-day class and take a test that certifies them to do an inspection of a Title V system or an on-site septic system and show that it's properly functioning, not whether the tank is structurally sound. Generally, when you get into precast cement and certifying something that it's structurally sound, you're talking about a structural engineer, which is going to cost thousands and thousands of dollars, and it's not appropriate to put that burden on a homeowner. That being said, the Title V regulation went into effect in March of 1995, which now requires no matter whether it's a two-bedroom house or a four-bedroom house, that the minimum tank size is 1,500 gallons, and there's a whole section of the DEP's Title V code that gives all the details on the precast tank. With that, there's existing tanks that could have been put in the 60s, 70s, earlier than that, even that could be 750 gallons or 1,000 gallons. Those are no longer allowed. If they're no longer structurally sound or no longer meet the minimum flow capacities. Basically, this regulation allows the health department to go back on the engineer and say this is not an appropriate statement or thing to have a homeowner do. Generally, tanks, especially the precast, and the older they are from the 60s and 70s, the precast is different than it is now. The standards were a little different. It could be a thinner construction. I've seen many, many distribution boxes, which are the same precast, a little smaller, and also tanks over time. The gases just from the septic itself corrode that precast, and it became structurally unsound. So this protects the homeowner from having to try to find someone that's going to certify it. I don't know any Title V inspector that, if you were to call them, would come out and certify a tank for structural integrity. So it would protect the homeowner and also any future buyer of that property as well, to make sure that when the system that's currently in failure that you're replacing, along with the field and all the piping and the distribution box, the last piece is the tank, you have a complete system that's current with the existing state regulations. So that's the code or the regulation basically in a nutshell. This would not, just to clarify, there's I guess been some confusion, this would not mean if you get your tank pumped that you would have to upgrade your tank. This is solely for a situation where your septic has completely failed and has to be replaced. Again, dealing with this for 14 plus years, I know you're already having an engineer out there, you're already designing a system, you have an installer out there, they're digging up your entire yard. Cost-wise, if you had to replace the tank, say 10 years later, even though the field is still functioning, you still have to, again, hire another engineer to come to submit a plan, get a permit, get installed, and come back and dig up your yard again. So make the system complete while they're already out there. So.
Thanks, Matt. Yeah. Kathleen, before I go to the board, do you have anything to add to that?
No, there are five people here.
I'm gonna go to the board first, and then I'll go to the public.
To the board first, okay.
Yep.
No, thank you.
Actually, Bridget, I can too. It doesn't mean if you currently have a tank that doesn't meet this criteria, that you would have, we're gonna come and find you and you have to replace it. Again, it's only in that instance where you have a failed system and it's, you know, you've hired an engineer to design the upgrade or repair, you're getting that replaced, yes.
We have the specific language on the proposed.
I'm going to actually ask you to wait, sir, until the board discusses, and then you can ask your questions.
It's not a question, it's a request. Could I have a copy of the specific language that you're discussing?
Thank you, Kathleen.
All right, go ahead.
Thank you. Go ahead, Jeff.
I have no questions at this point.
Any discussion?
No.
Okay. Tim?
No, no questions, no comments.
Sure. Kathleen, do you want to go to the audience that's in the room first or to the people that are on Zoom first?
It's up to you, Bridget.
I don't have a preference. Jeff, Tim?
While we do the room first,
sure.
Does anybody have a question? Do you want to come up and just state your name and address? At least come close enough so they can hear you.
My name is John Lombardi. I live at Washington Street, right? There's no sewage in our area.
Okay.
What I want to know is, what happens if you try to sell your property? Is it an automatic failure?
No. Only if your system fails a Title V inspection. This is only, so no.
It's a system that was done in the early 80s.
Correct.
Complete. Inspected by the town of Franklin, approved, and I have it taken care of regularly. And it's inspected by the septic system company.
So when you go to sell your house, you get a Title V inspection. If that passes and it says your system is functioning properly, everything stays the same. You sell your house as you would right this minute. This is only if that company were to come in, or septic inspector would come in and say, no, your septic is in failure. It is not, it has to be replaced. That's per law. That's when, not just by selling your house, you have a passive title box.
Well, the only other thing I don't agree with, I've been in a repair business all my life. If something's able to be repaired, you repair it. Now, what's the story with if a thing needs a repair, if it's $1,000 or something like that, all of a sudden you're gonna spend $30,000 or $40,000 to put a system in?
That's not the case. So
it's, yeah, it is.
Well, there's a difference between a failure and a conditional pass. So if you get a conditional pass, you can repair those components as required. But if your system is in failure, that's the state law. That's not a Franklin regulation, that's a Title V regulation.
That isn't what that little article would have to pay for.
So you have your tank?
Yeah,
and then you have piping that goes out to the distribution box that goes to the field. The cost of a $30,000 repair the majority of that is all in your engineering and the field replacement, not the tank. The tank is probably $1,500 and then
People have got their yachts landscaped now. I've got a pool in my backyard now.
Right.
And things are going to get disturbed.
Nothing, unless your system's in failure and you, by law, have to replace it.
I have no intention of selling my house. I'm just throwing it out there if something down the road happens.
Well, thank you.
This is only if your system's failed already. And you're already having an excavator or installer come, and they're already going to be digging up your yard to replace your field. This includes the tank, to make sure your tank is brought up to code as well.
So you're talking title five.
One at a time, though.
The real estate agent gets a hold of that. There goes the price.
Oh. Thank you. Sir, you were next, sir. Your name and where you live?
My name is Frank Edward Falvey. Yeah. I live at 920 Quant Street, Franklin, Mass.
Thank you.
My first question is, in the first sentence it says, existing septic tanks that do not meet the current type 5 minimum capacity requirement of 1,500 gallons.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure my tank is in 1,500 gallons. So, because the next sentence that says will not be approved for use in either a repair or upgrade situation, does that also mean that if I don't have a 1,500 gallon tank, it will automatically fail in Title V?
If you have an inspection done and the rest of your system is functioning, no. Only if the rest of your system is in failure, then you have to upgrade your tank to meet current regulation.
Why doesn't a 750 tank serve the same purpose as a 1,500 gallon? Why is the minimum now 1,500 gallon?
The state made that determination in 1995. You'd have to ask Mass DEP.
I see in the paper that there's approximately 2,800 people that could be affected by this change. Is that near correct?
No.
There are 2,800 tanks that may come up under this subject.
Oh, hardly. I mean, you can answer that, but that makes it sound like we're going house to house saying, you have to get a Title V inspection.
My point is, to continue, if there's 2,800 homes that could be subject to this, first of all, my understanding is that a septic tank is better to have in a town than being connected to the sewer system, because that increases the use of the sewer treatment plant. Is that statement near correct?
We're not saying they have to connect to sewer.
So, but I'm saying, how many of these 2,800 people could connect to sewer?
That's higher at DPW.
Yeah, we don't.
I'm going to propose that it could be 1,400 people. It could be half the people. I would propose that it's cheaper to connect to sewer.
Well, per the Massachusetts Title V laws, if your system fails and you have sewer available, by law, you have to tie up sewer. That's state law.
That's state law, and that was saying that the town is better off having septic tanks in the local community than being connected to sewer, which is more costly and environmentally more disadvantaged to the town and the homeowner?
That's a state law. We cannot legally deviate from that. Unless a hardship is shown where you have a situation where the sewer connection is not feasible, that's the only time that you would be allowed to repair it if you had sewer available.
Let me also propose that out of 2,800 people, there's probably 1,400 of the households that are owned by people over the age of 65 that these homes that you're directing here are older homes where people have stayed in the home for a number, a long, long time. This is adding cost to them.
All right, thank you. We can only allow a few minutes per person because we have a jam-packed agenda, and you did get your point across, so we appreciate that. But I have to address other questions as well. Okay, you can come back around after I see other people, but thank you. Anyone else in the room have a question?
I'm Ed Peterson, 203 Forest Street, Franklin. I've lived there since the house was brand new. I know the builders, I know the contractors that built the house. My concern was, and I know the land where the septic, my house is sitting on, it's nothing but gravel. So as far as the leach field in it, that's fine. My concern is if in the event the tank crumble, like you say, I would have to go to a 1500 and not a 1000 yet. Right. Like they put
you would, I mean, either way, you would have to do that for the state law. You couldn't get a septic because you have an existing 1,000 gallons.
Right? Yeah, that's what they put in that hold it down. You like 60 houses.
For the state law, you have to put a 1500 gallons.
I mean, if the field is fine, it's just the tank I got to replace.
And that's only if the field fails or the tank would have failed, which you have to replace that day. Yeah.
Or I could sell the house tomorrow, and then I wouldn't have any implications as far as doing anything to the septic system.
If your field passes Title V, you sell tomorrow without having to do anything to that.
Who's going to certify it if it's not up to Title V?
So Title V would be if it's a 1,500 gallon tank, and it was installed since Title V.
We all have 1,000. So 1,040 houses up there, they all got 1,000. So the Title V requires I get an engineer to validate the tank that is still in good standing?
No. Not. So if you have a Title V inspection to sell your property,
yeah,
that inspector's going to go out, they're going to value your system to make sure it's functioning properly.
Yeah.
If you pass, you don't have to do anything to the tank. Only if it fails and your entire system is being replaced already. This is just to ensure your tank is also brought up to code.
Okay.
Matt, can you just clarify that this is again to protect the homeowner so that if they put in this brand new field and they have an old tank that hasn't been certified, it could fail much, much faster, and they can go into backflow. That's what we're worried about. We're not, you know, the septic police trying to come out and make everyone come to this, you know, grand moment.
So it's not a mandate from the town, we got to replace it.
No, not at all. It's literally to protect you in the future. It's that if you're already having this work done, because what was happening previously is that the burden would fall on you as the homeowner to get an additional certification. That's not fair to you. We're already hiring someone to do the work. So this way, when they're doing the work, they're doing the repairs, when you do a local upgrade plan approval, all the information comes to the town, comes to the engineer, and they're able to look at it that way as well. But if we're not protecting you here, you could sell your house tomorrow, or you could buy a house tomorrow with a new field and a poor tank, and in a year have to replace everything. That's all we're trying to do, is curb those problems before they happen and be more in line with the state regulation. It's not to say that tomorrow, you know, January 6th, we want that 1,000 gallon tank out. That's not the intention here. It's just to prolong and protect the environment as well as the cost of the homeowner, whether you're selling or buying. That's really the intent here.
All right, thank you. And Bridget, I can only see 1, 2, 3 people on.
Sure. I think we have 1, 2, 3. We have a bunch. So the board's already spoken. So I'm going to go down the line in my little order here, if that's okay. So I have Maxwell. I don't know how to say your last name, so I'm not going.
Hey, Marangelo. I'm actually here for public comments.
Okay, perfect. So I'll skip on to you to the next one. And then I have Mr. Kevin Kearns.
I'm all set.
Okay, thank you. And then I have, hold on, I dropped my computer, so I have blobs. So I can't see everyone until I move around a little bit more. And I have Mr. Alan Earls.
All right, and then, so it doesn't appear, and then I have...
Well, I have Steve. I don't know if he has any comment.
Oh, okay, sorry, I can't
see. That's okay, no worries. And Steve, do you have any comment or question, concern?
No comment, just here reporting on the meeting. Thank you.
All right, thank you, sir. All right, Kathleen, we go back to the room.
Ma'am, your name and the address, please.
Hi, I'm Paul Lombardi, I'm at 757 Washington Street.
Thank you.
Now, what you have just discussed, can we get a copy of what you're saying so that we can have it for our records? And also, does the board of, you know, what you're saying that it's okay for our system so long as it doesn't fail? Now, in case in another, you know, couple of years something else changes and we're trying to, for some reason, sell our house, which we, you know, right now we have no intentions of doing that. And my other question is, with the state guidelines there, do you ever notify the residents that have septic systems that there's been a change in policy with the state?
Well, the change in policy is at a local level right now. The last time Title V changed was when?
1995.
Okay.
Yeah. Because we're at least a quarter of a mile before there's any town sewage. Oh. And they just did all water pipes in the development across from us. I can't see the town tearing up the roadways to install sewer pipes at some point to address Colonial Village area there.
Right.
That, you know, the whole thing was for recharging the water back into the system for your septic systems, you know, working rather than have it flow out to the Charles River or, you know, the Boston area.
So to answer your first question, you want something more in layman terms?
Yeah, layman terms that we can have, you know, that if for some reason, even my neighbors, if they get for some reason that they're going to be selling their property, and, you know, they might be confused as we are on this.
Sure. So what I'll do, I'll leave my business card out. I should have enough. And then you, anyone who wants something in layman terms, Bridget, is that okay to kind of, okay.
Yes.
So I'll leave my business cards out and just feel free to email me and I can send you something, okay? And
then, Kathleen, once you've kind of crafted that sort of breakdown of the language where it doesn't seem like we're coming out and attesting to every single tank, maybe right. We can also post that on the website to people that don't have, that aren't here, don't have access to the meeting or don't want to come to the meeting can still sort of access that sort of cheat sheet on the website.
Yeah, that's
great. That way it's just, you know, just available.
Absolutely.
All right, hold on one second. I do have a hand raised. So, Steve?
You are reading my mind, Madam Chair, and once it's posted, let me know, and I'll certainly share that out to the community as well.
Sure, great. Thank you so much for your help. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Is there any other comment or question on this matter before I go ahead and close the public hearing aspect and we go into a vote?
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
I would ask that you look at the age of the homeowners that they are going to be affected. And I think you're going to find they're probably over 65 years of age. And they're going to be seriously impacted possibly by this. The other important thing I think is there's 2,800 possible residents. And if say 14 half the tanks fail, then and they go by a place with a sewage, has there been a study done of how that is going to affect the cost in the current sewer system? I think we're at a potential that we could overload the system and increase the cost. Then the best thing to have is have a septic tank on the property.
That has nothing to do with this.
That's a state law. It's not pertaining to this particular regulation. This is regarding your tank and not your entire system. It's not saying if your system fails and you have to replace your system four times your sewer through the, this just means that you have to bring your tank up to code as well as the rest of the system.
All right, we have one other question. I'm going to leave it at that. Go ahead, sir.
I think I know what Frank's talking about. If, say, you're on septic system, and all of a sudden the town, some builder comes along and wants to develop a certain area of town, and they'll run the sewage in the road. Now what happens is there's a betterment charge to you as a homeowner if you don't tie it to the sewer.
Only if you fail.
No. If it runs by your house, you're supposed to tie it to the sewer.
That doesn't pertain to this at all, not even
You go and spend a fortune on repairing the septic system, and all of a sudden the sewage is on your house.
I don't know how that works. I don't.
That's how it works.
You're the very last question. Now we've got to move on.
Well, I work for DPW. I know how it works.
Okay.
Yeah. If a developer comes in the town agrees for, they vote on the apportionment that is going to, because it's bettering supposedly the property, that in order to, if the town doesn't have certain grants and the developer is paying X amount of dollars, whatever runs by your property, whatever they vote for, that it could be the length of the on your roadway in front of your house, or it could be divvied up into different ways. The town pays a portion, the homeowner, but upon sale of their house, they have to pay off a betterment chart, and they can have it how many years? Usually it's around 20 years or so.
All right, thank you. I appreciate that. All right, Bridget, we got to move on. It's 5:30, and I got a ton more.
Yep, so go ahead and close the public hearing at 5:31. With that being said, is there any additional deliberation or discussion by the board?
Not for me.
Just want to thank everyone for their public comments and their considerations. It's important for the board to hear these things. That's why we hold these public hearings before we vote. Just wanted to extend my appreciation to everyone who's attended.
All right, thank you, Tim. And I concur, that's the intent. And then with some of the feedback we've received, we'll make sure that additional information is crafted so that it's easier to understand, because again, the intent here is only for those failed systems. And the intent here is to protect the homeowner or the future buyer. It's not to become, tank police and check every single tank that's in town. It's for those failed systems, and it's to ensure public health and protections for the environment, but also for the homeowner. Is there a motion to accept the amended language as presented by Matt Tanis?
I make a motion to accept that.
Is there a second?
Second the motion.
All right, so again, we have to do a roll call vote. So I will go to Vice Chair Jeff Harris.
Yes.
Tim?
Yes.
And the chair votes yes. So that's three all in favor. And then Kathleen and or Matt, these regulations go into effect 30 days from posting DEP, or when does that, can you just confirm that piece?
That should go into effect as soon as you vote for it.
No, I think there's a holdover period. We have to submit it to DEP, have it stamped. I think it's 45 days from the vote or 30 days from the vote, Matt, do you remember?
I've never heard of that.
I think it's 30, but you can choose a date. Maybe make sure it covers.
March 1st, maybe. April 1st, because we don't do installation until April 1st.
That sounds reasonable to me. So is there another motion from the board to support this regulation once it's been signed and submitted to DEP to go into effect, promulgated on April 1, 2022?
I make a motion to accept.
To have the regulations go into effect April 1st?
Yes.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second the motion.
All right. Again, roll call vote. Jeff Harris?
Yes.
Tim?
Yes.
And the chair votes yes. Okay, awesome. So that concludes the vote for the amendment of the Title V regulations. And then again, I appreciate everyone's comment and feedback. And Kathleen, maybe at some point this week, you and Matt can kind of do the language up so that it doesn't seem as threatening. Send it to the board so we can just have kind of look at it, and then we'll make sure it goes out to Steve Sherlock for widespread sharing, if you will.
Definitely.
Thank you. All right, let me find our agenda. Okay, so the next item on the agenda is the 27 Winter Street meeting with new owners. Is that you? Yes. Or Matt?
Yep. That would be me. So the asbestos abatement was done on December 27th, and the contractor pulled a demolition permit. I okay. talked to the owner yesterday. You know, she's going to stay in touch with me in regards to time frame, as you know, as far as the demo goes and such. And I said that was fine. I just wanted to have an update before the February meeting.
Is there any questions from Jeff and or Tim?
Hold on.
Yeah. I was just going to say, I went past the property today, and it looks like the asbestos siding has been removed or almost all removed at this point. It looks like it's down to the old wood clapboard siding. So they are working on it, which is definitely
different. Are they planning on demolishing that house? I guess not, right? They're planning on redoing it?
No, it's coming down.
Oh, it is going to come down.
Yeah. Yeah. So I should have more information on the February meeting as to when.
So we don't have any kind of schedule yet to when that's going to happen, right?
No. I spoke with her, the owner, last night, and she's going to stay in touch. And, of course, the building commissioner will be able to let me know when it's going to come down as well. So...
we haven't given her any kind of time frame limit at all still to have that done.
We can in February. I wanted just to give her a chance to get rolling.
Yeah, I think the last we left off from the board was that she had until the February meeting to provide Kathleen with enough reassurance that there was a plan in place, such that the didn't have to appear. Kathleen, based on what you know right now and the interactions you've had with the owners, do you anticipate wanting the owners to appear for the February meeting?
If I could just say this, if by the last week in January that I don't see a building permit, a demo permit pulled, then yes.
Okay. Then my recommendation would be that we don't change anything that's been relayed to the owners from the board at this point.
I think that's fair to leave that like that, yeah.
I concur. All right, let me go. So the next item on the agenda is, I believe, the medical comment report, which should be by Matt.
As submitted for the month of predominantly the month of December, I had 1 housing code inspection, 2 re-inspections, 1 nuisance re-inspection, the 13 biannual routine inspections, 1 of which required a re-inspection and it's all set. 1 general food complaint inspection, 2 foodborne illness complaint inspections, and assisted with the COVID youth vaccine clinic on December 29th and attended a habitable housing task force meeting on the 3rd this past Monday.
Matt, is the Habitable Task Force meeting just Franklin or is it regional?
Just Franklin.
Cool. Thank you. Yep. Jeff or Tim, any questions for Matt?
Not for me.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you, Matt. The next item on the agenda, now that I can't find anything, is the public health nurse update. So we'll go to Alicia, please. Hi, Alicia. How are you?
Good. How's everyone doing?
Good, thanks.
So just a little update. TD, still only one active case, still conducting weekly Zooms and home visits. Influenza, we're starting to get more numbers in. So I just did it from like August, ran a report until now, and 28 confirmed cases, 2 suspected. COVID-19, our total cases since the beginning of this pandemic back in February of 2020, till I ran a report till the end of December, and of course still numbers come in because they get reported late sometimes. But when I checked this last night, it was 4,312 confirmed and probable cases, 56 deaths confirmed, 3,566 via PCR, and the rapid tests were 746. Of course, these numbers aren't reflecting any home kits that have been done. For the month of December, we have seen a large increase. So far, 998 confirmed and probable cases have come in for the month of December. So I've been trying to focus on nursing homes, assisted living facilities, daycares, and schools. We've now been starting to send letters out just to try to cover as many people as we can, because with such high numbers like that, it's hard to reach out to everyone. We are planning on doing another COVID vaccine clinic. We just put out a flyer today for the COVID youth clinic to be on the 19th of this month, and then they can get their second vaccine on February 9th. It'll be 150 doses available for the first and then second. And something me and Kathleen have also been talking about that we will be planning is a booster clinic. We don't know what age bracket we're going to do, but it's something we're planning for. And I'm going to be doing my first blood pressure clinic on the 12th for the Franklin Housing Authority. So that'll be good to go there and see, assess any needs, and start doing those clinics.
Do we have anything going on as far as testing for COVID? Is there anything available yet in town?
Let me speak to that. Do you want to speak on what you ordered?
Bridget, I'm just going to be out of order on the agenda to answer
that. That's quite all right with me. Have at it.
Yep. So currently, to answer your question, Jeff, I've ordered what's called Bionex Now. They're rapid test kits, very accurate. It's what most of the colleges use. So Alicia has been testing people down at the senior center in their cars. But to that, today we ordered 3 cases of 90 antigen kits for the town residents, as well as the first responders. And we will continue to reorder on a regular basis based on the need that we see, you know, arises.
And where would people go to get these tests?
So we haven't really decided that. So it'd either be to Alicia or to the health department. So I would say the health department is probably more practical.
Are we going to put something out there to the town to let everybody know that stuff like that's available?
Yeah, Melissa, she's our new graphic artist, and she'll post something out there on social media. We've had a lot of calls because about a month ago, DPH distributed these particular testing kits, at-home testing kits, to 102 towns and cities. The town of Franklin didn't meet the criteria for demographics, so we didn't get any. But what we've experienced is the residents who found out about this have been calling a lot, asking if we have them. So we think that, you know, there's going to be a need for them.
Yeah, I would think so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm excited about that. So what happened with that is DPH actually sent us vendors that they contracted with. So so procurement went ahead and secured a vendor. And today we placed our first order. So, so that's how that works.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Alicia, do you have anything else to add?
Yeah, that's all right now. Like the testing kits I have, there's not many of the Bionics now. Like for instance, with the fire station, if there was an exposure, you know, like I'm gonna be seeing some people tomorrow, it's more for those like high risk ones. We don't really have many right now. So it's great that Kathleen has, you know, ordered these, and I think that'll be great and make a lot of people very happy because it's a huge problem for people to find testing resources right now.
Yeah.
Very hard.
And we're actually, this is not for the residents, this is for municipal staff and their families, for the Bionics now.
The current, what you have in, what you have in place right now.
Correct, yeah.
Okay. Okay. thank you, Alicia.
Thank you.
Kathleen, Medicom and Shared Service Grant EPI update.
Yep, we hired an EPI who will start on Monday, January 10th. The office with Alicia and her name is Casilla has actually been put together today at the Senior Center. So they'll be working together, which will be really beneficial to Alicia to start to, you know, back off from a lot of COVID and start, you know, doing a public health nursing role. So we're very excited to have her on board.
Kathleen, how often is she in Franklin?
She'll be in Franklin full time.
Oh, she's here even though she's Medicom-it?
Yep, yeah, even though she's but should, you know, she'll work back and forth, but her main office is here.
Okay. I was just curious.
Yeah, she's actually a Board of Health member in the town of Hudson, and the director highly recommended her, and Alicia and I met her twice, and we were very happy with the fit.
Cool. Jeff or Tim, any questions about the new EPI?
No, congratulations, it's great news.
Thank you.
Kelly says she's good, she must be good.
She's good.
All right, exciting. Our next item on the agenda is 69 Cleveland Ave local upgrade.
Yeah, you all have that in your packet.
Yeah, it looks like an upgrade approval for a 12-inch separation between a leaching facility and a basement where 12 feet, where 20 is required, using a barrier. Is that what we're looking at?
Yeah, and Wade actually recommended the upgrade.
Okay. So just for public record, Wade is our contracted engineer.
Yes.
And he did give the recommendation to the health department office to go ahead and support this local upgrade. So yes. Are there any questions from Jeff and or Tim?
No, not for me.
None for me.
All right. Is there a motion to accept the local upgrade request to reduce the separation from 20 feet to 12 feet?
I make a motion to accept that from 20 feet.
Is there a second?
Second the motion.
All right, so we'll go to roll call vote. Jeff?
Yes.
Tim?
Yes.
And the chair votes yes. All right, let me go back to the agenda. Oh my goodness, sorry, I swear I'm more organized. I broke my computer, so I have black blobs, so I'm trying to scroll back and forth. The next item is COVID testing kits. Kathleen, is there anything else to add to that component, COVID testing kits, or has that sort of already been out of order addressed?
Yeah, already addressed.
Okay. All right, and then any new business, either from the department staff and or board members?
I can't think of it. I think we covered everything.
Okay, Jeff?
Nope. I'm good.
Okay. Hold on. I think the next one is public comment, but you know how. Okay, so the next item is citizen commentary. So I know we have one person who is here for that explicitly. Max, do you want to go right ahead?
Yeah, thank you. My name is Maxwell Marangello. I live at 127 Central Park Terrace, Franklin, Massachusetts. First, I want to thank the Board of Health for their tireless work during this pandemic and volunteering on behalf of the town, as well as the department staff. I come before you tonight so I can better understand a particular topic. And I understand if you aren't able to respond to my comments, I know the town council has that rule. As you know, in areas of substantial or high transmission, the CDC recommends community leaders like yourself encourage vaccination and universal masking in indoor public spaces, in addition to other layered prevention strategies to prevent further spread of COVID-19. So I want to better understand the rationale for why the Board of Health has not aligned itself with the CDC recommendations in regards to masking. Inaction is just as much of a policy decision as action is. So I just want to get a better understanding from you as to why that decision or no decision has been made on that. And if there isn't a good rationale, debating implementing mask mandate as soon as possible to combat the spread of the newest variant. So thank you.
Thank you, Max. I will go to Jeff or Tim. Any comments prior to?
Not for me.
Tim?
I appreciate you bringing this up, Max. Obviously, this is something that very much affects all of us, including all the members of the board, but certainly all of the members of the public. People like you who bring these matters to our attention for further consideration. I think this is not something that the board has directly addressed, but the board in our time over the last 2 years has followed much of the lead that the state has taken in this area. Doesn't mean we have to all the time, but this has been our approach thus far, and certainly worth more conversation if as this continues to be an issue. So I appreciate you bringing it up now, and thank you for attending tonight's meeting.
So I agree with Tim. Thank you for bringing it up. It's definitely something that I think about on a regular basis, you know, as a professional, as a board member, but also, you know, as a parent with four kids, some that are in college, you know, just the whole gamut. It's not on the agenda, so we couldn't take a vote on it tonight anyway, but we can definitely confer to meet again. There's a real strain, though, on local public health departments with the enforcement issue. And from my perspective, it's really hard to create a mandate that could potentially be unenforceable. So I think that collectively, when we meet again, perhaps maybe we can look at language that maybe leans more towards a Board of Health stronger advisory, and then give businesses and other individuals more information as to why they should be wearing a mask. But I think it can be very, very difficult to have a mask mandate in a community such as this. It's a substantial community, and you know, with only Kathleen and Ginny here full-time, Matt is in and out of the office. What could potentially happen is the amount of complaints that go through to Kathleen and Ginny could be inordinate, and then it becomes this sort of game of cat and mouse, and it's just really, really stressful on all involved. I wear a mask every day at work. It's mandatory where I work. So I definitely support mask wearing. I wear a mask when I go out in public, et cetera. So I think that it's just really hard to enforce something along those lines. And communities that do have mask mandates, that's what they're feeling, is that enforcement challenge. And then it creates a lot of ambivalence, and then just sort of heated discussions between either business owners or customers. And it just becomes this really ugly, gnarly mess. So I would like for us perhaps to meet again nearer than our next February meeting, if the board would, you know, agree to that, and maybe discuss maybe some stronger mask a stronger mask advisory from the Board of Health, and then create some additional information as to why it's important and how it's preventative and or effective. And then maybe speak a little bit more to the vaccine piece. I think we've been kind of silent on that as a board. But I think, again, showing how vaccines do work, if you're vaccinated and you become sick with COVID, your symptoms are significantly or could be significantly less than. So maybe we do more an educational campaign in that arena to start, as opposed to that firm mandate, because the mandate is definitely can be really, really tricky with that enforcement piece from my previous experiences and from conversations I've had with Kathleen in the office, et cetera, as well.
That's a great point, and that's something that we identified early on in the pandemic as a board when we first started working with our local businesses to create important education materials and guidance in line with the state mandates. Was the enforcement piece was a really the practical effect of a mandate and how to enforce it really shed light on the importance of education. And I will bounce back an agreement to you, Bridget, that the board certainly can continue to do more to educate the public on the importance of these tools, mask wearing, of vaccination. Not that the work that our health department hasn't already done hasn't been short of heroic, a word that's often too commonly used, but the amount of time and effort that that Kathleen and Ginny and the rest of our incredible staff have put into educating our public, educating our municipal employees, and providing opportunities for people to get vaccinated, for children to get vaccinated on short notice, the amount of time they spent acquiring and successfully acquiring materials and supplies that have allowed our community to remain safe in comparison to others regionally. It's impressive, and it's been underappreciated by the public. Nevertheless, that doesn't mean that more work can't be done, and the board is here to continue to support them as they take on these efforts.
Thank you.
Jeff, do you have anything else to add?
No, I don't. I think Tim put it very well. Thank you, Tim.
Max, just circling back around to you, I don't want to, do you have any other comments or feedback to that sort of approach?
I see some of the problems you're having. So I understand that. I think it was a comment I think that Timothy made with regards to following the state's lead. I could be wrong, but I think the state pretty much put it back on the Board of Health. So I don't know if the state actually said much of anything. It said that's the local towns to deal with. So I don't really know if the state even has a position or not. I'm not sure.
It's a recommendation. It's the same. It's a loose recommendation, and they're saying that if you want to be more restrictive, that
the state doesn't say. The state doesn't say Board of Health can't or should not or should mandate have a mandate either or.
Right.
Either way, but I think the other thing is maybe there's some way to incentivize businesses so that to have mask mandates so that if they choose to have a mask mandate that it doesn't end up coming back to Board of Health, that it's there's some sort of carrot you could use to businesses to implement mask mandates. Maybe that's another solution.
Yeah, we do see some businesses have it for like their employees, but not necessarily for the general public. There's just so much. It's just a very hairy situation overall, but we'll definitely make sure we circle back with the office, and we can put it a mask advisory / mandate discussion on a sooner than February agenda, just because this obviously isn't going away. So we can definitely further those discussions, and we can also pull surrounding communities to see kind of where they fall as well. I know that several have gone with that strong, with a strong language for an advisory. But some communities where mask mandates are in effect, for example, the city of Boston, they're unenforceable, and it just creates this, it pits the customer against the business owner, and there's a lot of still not proper mask wearing. So there's definitely a lot to be done. So I think that with the board support, we can revisit this. It's not that we don't want to, it's just a really, it's really just a hot mess, like all things COVID.
So one more thing, it's an analogy.
Sure.
And so let's say in front of the school, I'm near Parmenter School, there's a speed zone, it's 20 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Most people don't go 20 miles an hour. They go 30, 40. Mm-hmm. Does that mean you get rid of the sign? No, it means you still have the speed limit, and maybe it isn't enforced if it's someone who's doing, 30 or, if they're doing 50, of course, it's an issue. So my point is just because something isn't always enforced doesn't mean you shouldn't have it.
I can appreciate that thought for sure. Any other discussion on this board, Kathleen? Anyone? Ginny, Alicia, Matt?
No.
Okay. Thank you very much. We really appreciate your feedback, and we definitely will take that under advisement for a future prior to February meeting. Is there any other citizen commentary or topic before we maybe have a motion to adjourn? I feel like I'm teaching at Zoom at school. Bueller. Oh, it's real. That little non-camera button. All right, is it Tim, Jeff, anything else to add?
No, thank you again to everyone at the health department for all the work you've done. What, how much has changed since our last meeting?
Yeah. Thank you, everybody.
All right. So with that being said, I'll reach out to Kathleen tomorrow, and we'll try to figure out a date before the February 2nd meeting so that we can have a discussion about mask mandate and or advisory, just so we can get that on the docket prior to February 2nd. And then I'll ask Melissa or Ginny to circulate some dates to you guys, unless you want to schedule something right now.
Dates would be better.
Dates would be better. Okay, cool. So we'll follow up. I'll follow up with the office tomorrow directly to get some dates on, you know, that may work. I'm not available the 19th, so we can definitely make it work. We'll figure it out. So we'll do that. Any other, Kathleen, any other closing topics?
No.
Okay. So much like Jeff and Tim, I'd just like to thank everyone in the office. I know it's been a long haul, and we definitely appreciate all the work you've done outside of COVID, but also with the COVID support. I'm excited to see the Epi start and give Alicia some respite, potentially. It's currently 6:01. Is there a motion to adjourn?
I make a motion to adjourn.
Is there a second?
Second the motion.
All right. So again, roll call vote. I will go to Jeff first. Jeff?
Yes. Yes.
Tim?
Yes.
And the chair votes yes. So the motion to adjourn at 6:01 on January 5th. Thank you very much, everyone.
Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Thank you.
Happy New Year.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008. And used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.